Welcome to Sunday Morning at Faith Assembly, featuring the ministry of Senior Pastor Phil Goss. We're glad you've joined us. Now, here's Pastor Goss.
Well, if you'll locate your notes that you received when you came in this morning, tucked inside your bulletin, we're going to look at a subject today that's kind of a little different. I'm not aiming to be negative. I just want to point some things out. We're going to talk about six things you can do to mess up your home. Okay? Now, if you'll remember last week, I said it took two people. In this case, it only takes one. All right, everybody hear that? It only takes one. Now, if you're here today again and you say, I'm not married, don't want to be married, don't even want to think about marriage, then like just cross out at the top, six things you can do to mess up your life. Okay? It'll apply very easily all the way across the board. And so we're going to look at that this morning. The first one is overspend. Overspend. You see, here's what we have to learn at some point in time in life. Money can't buy happiness. Money can't bring contentment. Money cannot guarantee the future. Money cannot give you peace. Money isn't the solution to your problems. Now, the problem is this, that when we start having problems, we always think the solution, or one part of the solution is, if I just had more money. Well, if you just had more money, you would just spend more money. And it wouldn't fix your problem. Money creates pressure in your life. And you see, if you don't handle that pressure well, then you're going to create problems for yourself, for your spouse, and for your family. And you and I have to understand there are money principles that I have to put into place into my life, principles that are sound financial principles that are good for everybody, whoever they are. And there's also principles that I put into place that are there because I'm a Christian and I look at money differently than everybody else. You see, I don't need 100% of my money to get by. I only need 90. And as I work at it, we can get down to 80. I don't need all that because why? God is my provider and money is not. Money doesn't provide for me. God does. God is my source. God is the one in whom I trust. God is the one who I honor with my finances. I place him first in everything. And so I am responsible before God to be a good steward of what he's given to me, because the bottom line is this: I don't own anything. God owns it all. It's all his. He can do with it what he wants. You know, you walk out in the parking lot this morning, and as you get there, some yahoo had opened their door and put a big ding in the side of that car. It's a time to remind yourself, it's not your car. Okay? God, if they want to treat your car like that, that's fine. It's all his. And you and I are to use money to honor God. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6. Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and be wise. Even though they have no prince, governor, or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter. But you, lazy bones, how long will you sleep? When will you wake up? I want you to learn this lesson. A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. I'm responsible to take my resources and save and plan for the future, understanding that my nest egg that I have put aside is not my retirement fund, because God's going to take care of me, but I have a responsibility to work and to save. The writer here is saying, you have a responsibility to work and to save, but God is the one in whom you're going to trust. Now, you see, when you overspend in a marriage, what happens is it puts more pressure on a marriage. In almost every divorce case, money plays some part of the problem. Why? Well, now we're in debt. Now I got to get an extra job. Now I don't have time with my family like I should have. Now we got these pressures of these bills. Now we're constantly at each other about why we're in this situation. Who's going to solve it? Who's going to fix it? Can't go on any longer like this. Money is not your security. So you and I have to come to that place where we recognize, I've got to be a good steward. You know what else happens is we overspend and then we say we can't tithe. Now, how does that work? God, you're the source, you're the provider, you own it all, but I'm going to keep every bit of it. And we think that by keeping and robbing God that we're going to get ahead, but in reality what will happen is you will just get farther behind. Because God has to be first. Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything your land produces. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with the finest wine. You and I have a responsibility to put God first. When our resources are such that we have overspent, we can't blame God for that. We can't blame our spouse for that. We can't blame the people around us for that. We are responsible. And so I have to understand that if I am going to mess up my home and if I'm going to mess up my life, all I need to do is mishandle my money and overspend. And that will create untold problems that will be connected with that issue. Okay? Not one we like. See, we even live in a country. In fact, it's not just our country, but it's all countries everywhere. Most countries in this world, they spend more than they have. Where does that eventually lead? To all kinds of problems. And we're good at criticizing everybody else for doing that, our government for doing that, but what about us? I'll leave that one. Second thing you can do to mess up your home, overprotect. Overprotect. In other words, you become obsessed with protecting everything you have. Now, folks, listen. Not only is God the provider, God is the protector. God is the one who will take care of me. Now, that means I got to trust him. I don't need to be paranoid about what's going to happen. Again, I'm going to use wisdom. I lock the doors of my house. But I don't need to booby trap my yard, put a surveillance system out there, and make sure I'm armed to take care of anything that comes against me. God is better at protecting me than I am at protecting myself. And I need to trust him to protect me. I need to be cautious. I need to take steps that I can take. But God is the protector. Why? How does that help me? Because then I don't have to live in fear. I don't need to be afraid. God's going to take care of me. Oh, Pastor, what if somebody breaks in? Or what if they armed? And what if they kill you? Then I get to go to heaven. What if they take all your stuff in your house? It's not my stuff. If they want God's stuff, they can have it. We try to protect every aspect of our life. Well, I got to make sure that I can take care of this, and I got to provide for this, and I'm going to protect me. And here's where it's getting really, really bad. We try to control every aspect of our children's lives. Do everything you can to make sure they never have any pain or any difficulty. Take your kids and protect them and make sure nobody ever says anything bad about them. Make sure they have the best of everything. Make sure they have everything they want. But understand the reason that you're doing this is very selfish on your part. You want to look good. And when your kids make a bad decision, you don't want to feel guilty. Why are you so afraid? They're God's kids as well. And we live in an overprotective culture. And we try to protect everything that goes on. Fear is a horrible way to parent. Fear is a horrible way to live. The Bible tells us over and over again, don't be afraid. Oh, but you don't know the days and times that we live in. Come on. Here's what you need to get a grip on. The media has sold you a bill of goods and will play it up as much as they can, and you should not believe everything you hear. God is faithful. You don't live your life through your kids. You see, in the past, Parents raised their kids to be responsible adults. They were taught, you respect, you do this, you don't act like this. This is the way it's done. This is how it is. But today's parents are trying to protect their kids, and they want their kids to have everything. I got great news for you here today. I'm going to release you of something. Everyone is not a winner. Okay? You can't do anything you want. You know, when you're 5'6" and you say you want to play in the National Basketball Association, it's not going to happen. Not unless you're really, really fast and can jump really, really high. Oh, you can be anything you want to be. No, you can't. Well, everybody wins. No, they don't. You're always a winner. No, I'm not. There's times in life where I lose. Better get used to it. Better teach them that early. That's a part of life. You don't get everything you want. You don't get to have everything like you want it to be. But we so shelter, I love the term that they have for this now. It's called helicopter parents. They hover. You know? And if my kid doesn't get the teacher I want them to have in school, if my kid doesn't get this and get this, then I'm going to take care of this and I'm going to provide for this. And, you know, teach them how to lose. Teach them how to fail. Teach them how that, you know what, you're going to be rejected. There's going to be times and fail. But failure isn't final. Failure doesn't define you. You're going to fail, but that's not the end of the story. You can overcome that. Stop making excuses for them. Oh, but they're really just a good kid. No, they're not. They're another human being, and we human beings are selfish brats. That's who we are. We think about self before everything else, and we want to protect us. And then as a parent, I want to protect them. And what happens is you protect them all their life, and you know what? When they get to be old enough and no longer around your protection, how are they going to handle life then? Now the brutality of life is going to face them square, and they've never had to deal with it, and you're not there anymore to solve every problem for them. Let your kids be kids. Your four-year-old doesn't need to know all the multiplication tables. Let them deal with a hard teacher. They'll probably have a hard boss one day. They better learn how to accept that. But we want to protect everything. We want to protect ourselves. We want to protect our kids. We want to protect everything around about us. Let me ask you a question. Where's God in this? The time to give your kids to God is when they're still in your arms and can't walk, not when they're 25 and in a mess. Discipline them. Teach them. Train them. Proverbs 13:24. If you refuse to discipline your children, it proves you don't love them. If you love your children, you'll be prompt to discipline them. Proverbs 22:15. A youngster's heart is filled with foolishness. Now, remind yourself that as a parent. That's what their heart is filled with. But discipline will drive it away. Proverbs 23:13. Don't fail to correct your children. They won't die if you spank them. Proverbs 29:15. To discipline and reprimand a child produces wisdom, but a mother's disgrace by an undisciplined child. You want to destroy your life? Overprotect. You want to destroy your home? Overprotect. God's your protector. God's your provider. Never forget it. And live like you believe it. Third thing you can do is override. Override. Dad and mom need to be together in raising kids. Now, there is something I see happening far too often that creates a real problem for families, and that you will have one of the parents take the side of the child, and now you have two against one. You will destroy your home. Now let me say something very clear that's not just my opinion, it's a biblical answer. Your spouse is more important than your child. I'm going to say it again. Your spouse is more important than and your child. Well, I got to protect them. No, you don't. You've got to take care. Well, Pastor, what if? Come on, quit always going to the exception. Don't you dare take your child's side against your spouse. Well, my spouse being unreasonable, maybe, but the two of you work that out in another place at another time when they're not around. You deal with it then, but never in front of the kids. Because here's what children know. If they can divide, they can conquer. Why would they do that? Let me go back to what I've said previous. Because they're selfish brats. They want their way, and they don't care what they need to do to get what they want. And if they find out they can get what they want when they divide dad and mom, they will divide dad and mom. And so you and I have to understand that I need to never override my spouse in front of my kids. And there's been times in our home when we had kids around that my wife would say to me, you're a little hard on them. I'd go, well, maybe I was. You can go in and play the good cop now. Go ahead. But you and I need to be together in how you're going to parent. A house divided will fall. Well, we can't agree on this. I think this and I think this. Well, go back to last week and how do you solve your problems? You work them out, don't you? You come to an agreement. Now, spouses, grandmas and grandpas, hear me. How else do you override? Well, you discount your spouse, you overrule your spouse, you mock your spouse, you correct them whenever you can. You make fun of the stupid mistakes that your spouse makes. You do it in public. You do it whenever you can get the chance. Make sure that everyone knows that you're the boss and you married an idiot. Just make it clear to the people around you. Just let them know that you're the one that's sane. You're married to someone who's insane. Make sure that you're always right and you're superior in every way. And I promise you, you will end up disappointed in that marriage because your arrogant behavior is destroying it. You override the person. You run over them. You just do what you want to do. You act however you want to. You say you're the one who has common sense and the other one has no sense. You put them down. And not only do you do that in your mind, you do that in public. You do it in front of people. How dare you? Because the Bible tells us that when you do that to your spouse, you're doing it to yourself. Because two are one. Moving along here. Ephesians 22. I know every time I read this, it's your favorite verse. I know. You wives, submit to your husbands. And wives, that's not a misprint. Okay? As you do to the Lord. For a husband is the head of his wife, as Christ is the head of his body, the church. He gave his life to be her Savior. And the church submits to Christ, so you wives must submit to your husbands in everything. And you husbands must love your wives with the same love Christ showed the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by baptism and God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without a spot or a wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she'll be holy and without fault. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man is actually loving himself when he loves his wife. So what's it saying there? In reality, it's saying both need to submit to one another. Marriage is not a place for you to demand your way. Marriage is a place where you lay down your life. Marriage is not a time for you to override and be a bully. Marriage is not a place for you to put down the other person. Marriage is a place where you submit to one another in love. Marriage is a place where you lay down your life. You don't puff up your life. You want to destroy your home? Think that you're the best thing since sliced bread. And for some of those younger, has there ever not been sliced bread any time in the world? Come to that place where you understand this. You want to destroy your home? Override. You want to destroy your life as a single? Just override everybody around you and be egotistical and think you always know what's best. Do it at work. Do it with people around you. When you put people down, you're making yourself lower than they are. Our words as Christians are to build one another up, if I read the Bible correctly, and I think I do, not to tear one another down. Aren't you glad you came this morning? Fourth thing, overestimate. Overestimate. Now, hold on to your seats. There's a myth out there that people are believing. Okay, I'm going to bust this myth. There is no such thing as a soulmate. Oh, I'm just looking to find my soulmate. You're not marrying, you're not looking for God. God is the one that completes you, not another person. And if you're looking for another person to complete your life, you are going to be disappointed and you're going to make a mess of your life, because there isn't another person on the face of this earth who can be everything to you you want them to be. That's God's position. Not only do we estimate that, overestimate my children. Oh, my child is going to be a rocket scientist. Overestimate. You know? Here's what the Bible says in Romans chapter 3. As the scriptures say, no one's good, not even one. No one has real understanding. No one's seeking God. All have turned away from God. All have gone wrong. No one does good, not even one. Do you understand what he's saying? All, no one, not even one. That means you're included. Their talk is foul, like stench from an open grave. Their speech is filled with lies. The poison of a deadly snake drips from their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness, quick to commit murder. Wherever they go, destruction and misery follow them. They do not know what true peace is. They have no fear of God to restrain them. Your spouse is a fallen, needy, hopeful, wonderful, and precious person who can do amazing things with you and for you, but they can't be God. They are not perfect. They can't heal your soul. They can't atone for your sin before God. They can't redeem your life. And if that's what you expect from your spouse, you are going to be disappointed. Your spouse is someone like you who needs to know that someone cares. They need to be known, and they need to be loved, and they need to be served, and they need to be celebrated just like you do. We are all broken. We are all wounded. And so is your spouse, and so is your dad, and so is your mom, and so are your kids. And sometimes we just think, well, you know, I'm dealing with real people. Yes, you are. People who have bad day. People who are struggling. People who are wrestling with their own sin, their own temptations, their own desire to get their own way. And the battle is very real. And if you forget this, you're going to be disappointed, because you're going to overestimate who they are and think that they're God, and they're not. Only Jesus, the hymn writer said, can satisfy my soul. Only he can make me whole. Those people are just like you, which makes it all the more important for you to work on that relationship, because they need what you need. Love, attention, care, and acceptance. If you overestimate what somebody else can do for you in your life, you are going to be a miserable person. Oh, I just can't wait till one day I can find my prince in shining armor. Sorry, the prince isn't that good looking, and the armor is all dinged and dented. All right? Well, if I could just marry the princess. Princess has warts. If I could just find that one person who would make me complete. If I could just find my soulmate. Oh. Now you'll hear all that garbage and stuff you read in our society. But folks, it's not biblical. Only God can be to you what you have need of. He put within you a longing to be complete. And only He can complete you. And if you're expecting someone else to do that for you, you are going to make a mess of your marriage. And you will make a mess of your life. It won't happen. Moving on. Overdue. Overdue. One way to be disappointed in life is to overdo it. And you see, we have all these nice little electronic devices. Supposedly, when they first came on the scene, the big thing about them was they're going to simplify our lives. Anybody found that to be true? No. All they do is complicate our lives, don't they? They make life harder. And let's be honest. For most people in this room today, we're too busy. We don't know how to slow down. We don't know that life is a balancing act, that you need rest, that you need to be re-energized, that you need to recover. And if you refuse to recognize that, if you refuse to recognize that there's seasons of life, the seasons of your work, then you're either going to burn out, bomb out, or blow up. And you're going to think, oh, I'm so important because I'm so busy. Busyness does not equal importance. Well, I've just got so much to do. Now, we've already established, we said it earlier, you and I are supposed to work, aren't we? I'm not saying we shouldn't work. I'm just saying is, do you ever have any extra time in your week? Now, God, in His wisdom, that I know your tendency, and your tendency is to do too much and to put too much things in your day. So God says, for your benefit, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build into your calendar a day of rest. Because you need it. God says, I'm going to do this for your own good, and I'm going to do this to help you. I mean, if you understand that every commandment God gives to us is for our own benefit, right? He knows something about us that we refuse to admit. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Remember and observe the Sabbath. By the way, this is one of the big ten. Okay? So don't think, well, I don't think that's good anymore. If you're going to get this one out, you've just eliminated all the Ten Commandments. Because that means we can pick and choose whichever ones we want, right? Remember and observe the Sabbath day, keeping it holy or separate. 6 days a week are set apart for your daily duties and regular work. But the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any kind of work. This includes you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. Then he rests on the seventh. In other words, I think he's giving us a little dig. Hey, I made the whole world in 6 days, and you can't get through your little piddly week? That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Now hear me. Sunday, today, is not a family day. That's not in the description, is it? Sunday is not a day, well, I went to church, now I got the rest of it to do what I want. Sunday is a day of rest. It's God's day. He says, you set it apart for me. I want you to rest. It's like tithing. Tithing says, if I will give God 10% of my income, of everything I have, then God will take care of me and provide for me, and I will have enough money. Right? We believe that, correct? Call it. I got to have a better thing than that, or I'm going to have a horrible offering today in a few moments. We all believe that, right? Yes, we do. Sabbath day is the same principle. God says, look, if you'll give me one day, you will accomplish more in that six than you ever dreamed of. But if you try to take my day and make it a part of that, you'll never have enough time. It's a principle of God. Do understand that it's God's day. And you will have more time if you will give God his time. And by his time, I'm not just saying, went to church, clocked in, check, God's good, we got him off the list. Now I can do whatever else I want the rest of the day. It's not your day. It's not a family day. It's God's day. And God says what you need to do is you need to rest. You need a day of rest. Oh, I can get by on just 4 hours, 5 hours of sleep. No, you can't. You might think you can, and you might for a while, but eventually you'll pay a high price for it. Well, I just got so much to do. I've just got to take this day and do more. No, you don't. You want to ruin your life? Just get so busy that you don't have time for your family and that you're squeezing them into God's day because you've taken every other day and used it for yourself. Last one. Oh, good. Great. Overrate. Overrate. Two little aspects of this. One is overrate the importance of kids. See, we live in a society that has elevated kids to a place they should not be in. We have made them the gods of everything. Oh, let's do it for the children. Let's do it for this. Make them more important than your spouse. Make them your life so you don't have a life. Make them your life so that you can ruin your marriage. Just overrate what your kids can do and what they need. Overrate it. But there's another aspect of this that becomes much more critical, and it's this. Overrate yourself. Go ahead and practice what addiction counselors call exceptional thinking. Exceptional thinking. And people like this, not thinking clearly, even though they think they are, they think of themselves as exceptional. They're exceptional to the rule. They're the exception to everything. They think they're different. They think they can flirt with sin. They think they can dance with the devil. They think they can ignore the guidelines of God because they know that others might not be able to handle it, but I can. Well, they have a problem with that, but I can deal with it. I can handle this. Well, I know it creates other problems for other people's marriages, but not mine. I'm different. I'm unique. I mean, you know, others couldn't do this. Others couldn't go to these websites. I mean, that'd mess them up. Others couldn't just drink once, and they wouldn't be able to stop. And others could never resist the seduction that I'm flirting with right now. But I can. I can handle it. But here's how we say it. Here's the line. I can quit whenever I want. I can stop at any moment. Really? How about now? I'll never get trapped. I'm the exception. I can do what no one else can do, and they go ahead, and later you find yourself disappointed and find out that God was right. You become ensnared in a mess because you were unwilling to face the truth about yourself. And you overestimated the ability to resist sin, and you overestimate your ability to continue to do what is right, and you overestimate yourself. You can think that it'll never get me and it'll never happen to me, and you're right on the edge all the time. You're not exceptional, and exceptional thinking will destroy your life. Well, I know God's word says this, but I can handle it. I know God's, but I'm okay. And if you think you're the exception, you're lost. You're going to ruin your life. And you're going to ruin the life of those around you. You ignore your tendency towards sin, and you will fall. You will get trapped. You will get caught. Now, most of us here would admit that we know what it's like to be disappointed in ourselves. You look back and think, well, I wish I wouldn't have done that. Or I never thought this would happen to me. I never thought I'd say something like that. Never thought I'd treat somebody that way. I never thought I'd ever do it. And you find yourself trapped. And if you overestimate yourself and what you're able to do, if you think you're more important than somebody else, and if you think you're stronger than somebody else, the Bible has a great warning for you in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11. All of these events happen to them as examples for us. They're written down to warn us who live at the time when this age is drawing to close. If you think you're standing strong, be careful, or you too may fall into the same sin. You think you can handle it? You're wrong. Well, I can handle it, I just don't want my kids to. Well, I can deal with this, but my kids can't. You're wrong. And you will destroy your life, and you will destroy your home. So the question I would ask you this morning, is there something going on in your life right now that you're making excuses for? That you're saying, well, it's okay, I don't see the problem with it. That you're saying, well, I can handle it, it's all right. If you think you're there, if you find yourself making excuses, you better be very, very careful, because if you continue down this path and down this road, what you're struggling with will one day eat your lunch. And if you think it won't, and you're bigger than it and stronger than that, you're mistaken. Want to ruin your life? Want to ruin your marriage? Just giving you six ways to do it. Now with these, all you have to do is one. One of them's enough. And as you look at the list, what's there for you? What is there in your life today that you need to deal with so that you don't ruin your life, and you don't ruin your home? Let's pray.
Thank you for joining us for today's service. If you would like to talk with someone about what you've heard, please visit our website at faith.ag or call us at 239-543-2700. If you're in the Fort Myers area and don't already have a church home, you're invited to join us for Sunday morning at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m. Faith Assembly is located at 7101 Bayshore Road. Join us again next week for Sunday Morning. Faith Assembly Sunday Morning is a production of Faith Assembly Media Tech, North Fort Myers, Florida.